that he's, and you know, he's my age. His years are not long before him. He wants to get something done.
Well, what about that age though? If his, and who knows, maybe he can make it into his 90s.
Well, yes. First one to take Francis too. That's Mitch Genesaretz with Dr. Matthew Fox, and he's on Facebook, and you can find a link on his Facebook page to that entire interview if you want to hear some more of it, including his theological suggestions of the day, which I definitely excerpted around. So thanks for listening. Opinions are those of the speakers, of course. There were a couple of loose ends, but, Jacobin Magazine, I think based out of Chicago. Might want to check it out. 1 minute after 11, it's time for the Labor Hour. Thanks again for listening. The WEFT, Champaign-Urbana, listener-sponsored and volunteer-operated radio.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air of listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois. The views and opinions at, first of all, yes, at 90.1 FM and webcast live worldwide at WFT.org. Views and opinions expressed here, those of the speaker, do not necessarily represent those of WFT station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some of our underwriting announcements.
Thanks, Dave. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees.
Okay, thank you, Bob. And we've got special guest calling in at half past the hour, Kevin Zeese, calling in from Maryland. And we've got some interesting shows coming up here on future programs. We're going to actually, we've have Jim Hightower that's going to be calling in sometime in February. We're narrowing down the Saturday. We've got a woman who actually runs a labor newspaper, a weekly labor newspaper up in Aurora, Illinois, the Fox Valley Labor News, calling in. And next week, we're having a person call in from the organization Labor Fight Back. So, yeah, stay tuned. And we're going to be having a lot of other interesting guests calling in weeks to come here. So tune in. And, you know, again, you're listening to the World Labor Hour. And I guess we've got some labor headlines to start off with today. And so, Bob, would you like to start or shall I?
I can go with a short one here. I noticed a poll that came out this week from Quinnipiac University. And this is another instance where maybe our legislators aren't always voting or doing what the public seems to think.
Oh, that seems to be a trend for at least
several years.
20 years.
Yeah. It says that the poll shows that most American voters support raising the minimum wage and extending unemployment benefits. 71% of voters say that they support an increase to the minimum wage, and only 28% are opposed. Even among Republicans, 52% agree, while only 45% oppose the hike. When considering the new minimum wage, 36% want it to be raised to $10.10 an hour, 18% want it to raise more than $10.10, and 18% want it raised between the current 7.25 an hour but below $10.10. Now, 58% of the voters also support a 3-month extension of unemployment benefits, with only 37% opposed to that measure. And this was a poll surveyed 1,487 registered voters between January 4th and 7th of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting that most Americans want us to do one thing, and we seem to be doing
different. I mean, let's see. 82% of the American public want a Medicare for All system.
Correct.
You'd never guess that watching the corporate media. And right now, I think the last poll I saw shows that it's about a little over 70% of the American people want us to withdraw from Afghanistan immediately. Which is up from a few years ago when it was, I remember it broke the 52% mark back about 5 years ago, and but now it's up to over 70%. So again, you know, it's unfortunately we don't live in a democracy. We live in a plutocracy, which means, but we got to take, that's what we got to change here. We got to get back to our original roots of what the, you know, what this country should be about, which is the will of the people and not the will of the wealthy and powerful.
What's the first step we can take to do that, Dave?
Well, first thing is our information sources, and right. You know, WFT, you know, especially programs, public affairs programs, is a good way to start. But not just WFT. There's other community radio stations around the country. There's also free speech television on satellite, as well as Link TV, and most importantly, the internet. The internet is probably one of your best news sources, because you can choose what news source, and you can determine over time which one has the best track record for both. Accuracy and truth and honesty, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So, okay, I've got an interesting news story here. Listeners, remember back a couple months ago, we had an interview with a socialist city council candidate in Seattle. Well, she got elected, and she was sworn in here this last week, and she actually gave a really interesting inauguration speech. And just to read some highlights from it, Kashama Sawant started off by saying, "My brothers and sisters, thank you for your presence here today. This city has made glittering fortunes for the super wealthy and for the major corporations that dominate Seattle's landscape. At the same time, the lives of working people and unemployed and the poor grow more difficult by the day. The cost of housing skyrockets, and education and health care have become inaccessible. This is not unique to Seattle. Shamefully, in this, the richest country in human history, 50 million of our people, one in six, live in poverty." She goes on to say, "This is the reality of international capitalism. This is the product of the gigantic casino of speculation created by the highway robbers on Wall Street. In this system, the market is God, and everything is sacrificed on the altar of profit." And she goes on to say, "In our country, Democrat and Republican Party politicians alike primarily serve the interests of big business. A completely dysfunctional Congress does manage to agree on one thing, regular increases in their already bloated salaries, yet at the same time allows the federal minimum wage to stagnate and fall further and further behind inflation. We have the obscene spectacle, the average corporate CEO getting $7,000 an hour, while the lowest paid workers are called presumptuous in their demand for just $15 an hour." And, yeah, I mean, this was a blistering, this is what it was, you know, her inauguration speech. Usually when politicians get elected, they kind of keep it low key, but boy, yeah. She really took this opportunity to just roast some people. And I'm trying to find out later in the speech where she basically says, "If you think that I'm not going to be doing any backroom deals as your representative of city council, just to let everybody know that it's not going to be business as usual with me."
Interesting.
We'll see how that goes, because of course she's only one person of many council people. However, she has stated that she plans to use her office on the Seattle City Council to rally, you know, basically for people to come to city council meetings and use it as kind of bully pulpit. This will be interesting to see what happens, but I know she's become almost a superstar in some way. She was interviewed on Democracy Now! Last week, and she's been getting attention even in the corporate media and stuff.
Interesting stuff out there in the Seattle area. You mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. The recent city SeaTac passed the $15 an hour minimum wage law.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
and interesting things going on out there.
Well, hopefully, it's a trend for the rest of the country.
Yeah. Well, in Ohio, didn't you have a story a couple of weeks ago about the labor slate that two dozen people?
I'm going to be trying to get somebody from it's Lorain County in Ohio, and right. I'm working on trying to get one of those guys to call into the show here for a future program.
Great.
But basically, they got fed up with the Democratic Party stabbed in the back, so I think it was 15 local union members ran, and 12 of them got elected to local government. I think it was a combination of the county board and some other offices.
Yeah, interesting stuff happening.
Indeed.
I got a report here again, something Dave mentioned a couple weeks ago. South Korea facing a wave of repression and tumultuous union protests. The railway unions are protesting against privatization of Korail, the railway network. Also, the teacher union has been deregistered, and now one of Korea's trade union confederations, the KCTU, has held a second general strike with another one scheduled for next week, and they have called for a president to resign in Korea. Yeah.
You know, I saw a photo on Facebook, I think it was, of this news story, and I mean, they showed the aerial photo of all the people that were in the streets. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, tens of thousands of workers there, you know. They've had a couple of these one-day general strikes that have essentially shut down almost all services in the cities there. So Now, like I say, they're kind of upset about this subdividing and commercializing the national railway.
Privatization,
yeah. It's supposedly a cost-saving measure to deal with the railway's yes. debt burden and financial losses and stuff like that.
Funny how that never works out, you know. It ends up, you know, whenever they privatize something, they always try to say, oh, it's more efficient, you know, than a government-run service. But it always ends up costing the people more, and the service is usually crappier.
Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah. I mean, of course, the first they have it lower prices, you know, lowballing, but once they've signed those contracts, you know, those long-term contracts, then, you know, things go all to hell.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Prime Minister declared the strikes illegal and stuff, but the people...
They still went out the streets,
yes. Still out there doing it, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's what had to happen in this country back before the NLRB and stuff, you know, that was passed in the 1930s. People, union people had to defy the courts, you know, and the law to get justice, and it's unfortunate when it comes to that, but, you know, whatever has to be done has to be done, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, also, another story from in the Pacific Northwest. This is about the Boeing contract vote. Everyone expected Boeing would turn up the heat by threatening economic catastrophe for the Puget Sound area in the Seattle area and thousands of lost jobs. But these members of the Machinists Union were blindsided from the most unexpected source, the International Association of Machinists International. Overruling local leadership abruptly announced a January 3rd vote for another extension agreement eerily similar to the one that had just been rejected. District 751's website reported International President R. Thomas Buffenbarger ordered the vote or objections of 751's elected officials and announced the January 3rd vote to the Seattle Times on Saturday, December 21st. Obviously disappointed with the national leadership, a longtime International Association of Machinists member told reporters that this rushed vote is not right and pointed out that 35% of the members were on vacation during this period, unable to get the information and participate in a democratic discussion. But plus, he said some exasperation, not one phone call, no contract whatsoever from International, and we had to read about it in the newspapers, even find out about this vote that was supposed to be this contract was supposed to be revoted on. And I guess the second time around, first time around it passed, I mean, it failed by a 2-1 margin.
Right.
Second time, with 35% of the members gone, it passed by barely by 1%. And so the members are outraged because what this does is, it ends a defined benefit pension plan for these workers, basically right. turned into a 401k type of deal. And also, I guess, new hires are going to be paid. So it's just another, how should I put it, more of the downward spiral, if you will, of the, middle class wages in this country. And, here there are these people in this local machinist union pay dues to their international union to supposedly get representation, and here the international union turns around and sides with the company. You know, it's just disgusting.
Some other information involved with that here late in the week this week. Apparently, four machinists asked the NLRB to overturn the vote, and partially about what you said, they felt that it wasn't fair to have the vote scheduled on January 3rd. Many of the union members had added a couple personal days to their regular Boeing winter break and were still on vacation. He said this time around only 23,900 members voted. Last time when they turned it down 2-1, 27,000 members mm-hmm. voted. So there was a significant decrease in the number of people voting. The closeness of the election there, it was decided by 600 votes. So a couple thousand people could have turned the tide on that, you know. And I noted a couple stories, news stories in newspapers this week, Dave, that came out on Monday about Boeing, and I thought it was ironic. You mentioned about how this is the end of the middle class, maybe, mm-hmm. and affecting the middle class. There was a story in the L.A. Times, and that's exactly what the headline says there on Monday. It says, "The Boeing Vote and the Death of the Middle Class." This was by Michael Hiltzik, I guess. And that came out on Monday. He says, "That brings us to the real impact of the contract vote, which is that it continues, even accelerates, the hollowing out of America's once thriving middle class." Ironically, on the same day, a story in the Chicago Tribune did not even mention the contract and the vote at all. Simply went on to say about how Boeing remained the world's largest plane maker in 2013. They delivered more jets. They had more profits. And the corporate executives were doing better and better. So it's ironic how you can get two different news stories in two different newspapers like that. One decrying it as, you know, the end of America's middle class, and the other one just simply touting the corporate profits of the company.
Well, the Chicago Tribune article touting the corporate profits of the company is more typical in the corporate media. What's unusual is the LA Times article. But, you know, as we were talking before the show about this, you know, it's interesting how there's articles creeping into the corporate media newspapers here and there about, you know, wealth inequality, the horrible healthcare system, and the mentioning actual single-payer Medicare for all, and now this, you know, this. So I think what that is a reflection that there's so much going on that we don't know about, you know, in different localities and stuff. But evidently, you know, there's enough noise being made out there that even some corporate media is being forced to take notice of it.
That goes piggybacks on what you said earlier to, you know, look at alternative sources for news and stuff, because there are stories out there, you know, whether it's Democracy Now. I would mention again, there's a new program on WEFT on Friday evenings. I believe it's at 5 o'clock to 5:30, Liberation Radio.
Oh, okay. I got to check that out then.
Yeah, you know. It's put out by a socialist organization.
Huh,
you know,
okay.
And interesting stuff. You know.
Okay.
But there is media out there that is reporting things, obviously. Democracy Now, Jim Hightower. That'll be great if we can get Jim Hightower on this program.
Yeah, I mean, we hear a lot of Jim Hightower on WEF from his pre-recorded stuff, but it'd be great to get him live, you know, on the air. You know, you know, speaking about alternative media sources, and earlier I was talking about the woman I'm going to be getting on the show from the Fox Valley Labor News up in Aurora. There's a monthly labor newspaper that's actually printed here in Central Illinois called the Grand Prairie Union News. It's printed in Bloomington, Illinois. And I just got an issue of it, looks like, here this last week. And, you know, it's interesting. It's only about, you know, 12, 15 pages. But besides local stories about what's going on in Bloomington Normal area, they've got other issues of concern, like here's one, the universal health care, Mexico has it. They got another story, low wages, redistribute the gains. So it's a really interesting newspaper. A lot of advertisements in here, of course, from various unions and, of course, worker comp attorneys. But, you know, I guess, you know, of course, the newspaper has to have, you know, some advertising revenue to, you know, keep going, but nevertheless, you know, they've got some great stuff in here. So I would recommend, you know, go check out their website. It's Grand Prairie Union News, and it's out of Bloomington, Illinois. So, you know, this, I think that's important that we probably, as much as possible here on the Labor Hour, we should, you know, promote these various news sources for people to be able to refer to.
Yeah, we should. We should talk about In These Times, where we get a lot of our stories.
Chicago, Illinois, yes.
Yeah. Labor Notes.
Yes, speaking of Labor Notes, the Labor Notes Conference is going to be in Chicago this year from April 4th to the 6th. That's over a weekend. I know there's a contingent of people from Bloomington Normal that are going to go. And I'm going to be going. I may be doing a workshop on labor media. It's still tentative. There's going to be a workshop being done by the Illinois Single Payer Coalition, too, about single payer versus the Obamacare. You know, information members need to know, because, unfortunately, Obamacare is threatening a lot of the union health insurance plans that have been around for years and years, called Taft-Hartley plans. So, yeah, as I've also, I know Joe Barry, who was an adjunct professor living here in Champaign, Urbana, until a couple years ago, and him and his wife moved out to Oakland, California, is also going to be doing, I think, something of a workshop up there in regards to organizing faculty and other people on college campuses. So, yeah, we'll have more details on that as we get closer to the date. So thanks for mentioning that, Bob.
Yeah, a couple other things. Labor Start, L-A-B-O-U-R.
The British spelling, yes.
Yeah, they've got great news stories from around the world. You know, if you want to know what's going on in Cambodia and the labor strife over there, there's been riots and people getting killed over there by the police, and they actually have implicated some of the South Korean companies. Samsung is building a new factory in Phnom Penh, and they've got apparently they've got some evidence that Samsung asked the police or the military there in Cambodia to take action against the strikers and mm-hmm. stuff.
So, okay, that's interesting.
And also, what Workers Independent News out of Madison, yes, Wisconsin.
Indeed.
Some more great media sources.
And one last one I thought about, Facts for Working People, which is a blog, basically a website that you should check out, because frankly, a lot of the news stories I get, like the one on Boeing, I got off of Facts for Working People. It's run by a retired Ask Me member, Richard Meller, who I happen to know, who lives out in Oakland, California. And so yes, there's a lot of them out there. It's just a matter of finding them. Pretty much the biggest problem here. So anyway, we're going to take a quick music break here, and then we'll be right back with hopefully our guest calling in at 11:30, Kevin Z. So stay tuned. You're listening to World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois.
Program. A religious fanatic posts footage of an interfaith service project. A group of teenage boys watches a video of a father playing catch with his son. An adult film star paints thumbnail portraits of elderly couples fully clothed and smiling. A record executive records a demo of his apology. A policeman makes reverse 911 calls, instructing residents to take to the streets. A patriarch reports for duty. She's wearing an orange jumpsuit and holding a picket sign. She's ashamed of her birthplace, but retreat is not an option.
Women and children, frontline, log on, tune in, stand and be counted, wounded. In the belly of the vulture, watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, frontline. Listen, consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Butterfly wing crosswinds send black hawks toward hurricane survivors. Roses sprout from empty lots and sidewalk cracks. Pacifist guerrillas move undetected through concrete jungles. New forms are beginning to take shape. Once occupied minds are activating. People are waking up. The insurgency is alive and well.
Rise of the Phobos, portrait of the new American insurgent. Rattle and shake the foundations of the world order. Assembly line, consent, resist, refuse, inform, create. Direct loved ones to the trenches. Suit up, forge rubble into fortresses. Plaster, cloth, aluminum, broken porcelain, rusted platinum. Burn blood stains from decompressed diamonds. Hammer the battle cry into braille-studded armor.
We are building up a new world. Do not sit idly by. Do not remain neutral. Do not rely on this broadcast alone. We are only as strong as our signal. There is a war going on for your mind. If you are thinking, you are winning. Resistance is victory. Defeat is impossible. Your weapons are already in hand. Reach within you and find the means by which to gain your freedom. Fight with tools. Your fate and that of everyone you know depends on it.
Okay, folks, that was the Phobos, and you're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Before Bob reads some more of our underwriting announcements, I just want to mention this really excellent article I saw this morning from on Counterpunch by Mike Whitney, he's the author of the book. Let's see, what's the exact title here? Hopeless, Barack Obama and the Politics of Illusion. And his recent article is titled Obama's Corporate Plantations. A very interesting article about this new plan they're talking about called Promise Zones that they're going to think thinking about setting up around the country and everything. It sounds like our caller calling in right now. So, hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Jerry Gordon from Labor Fight Back Network calling in.
Brother Gordon, it's supposed to be next Saturday you're calling in.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now we're waiting for Kevin Z, so if you could call in next Saturday at the same time, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Okay. That's sorry about that. There was some confusion there from our guest that we have scheduled for next week. But anyway, Bob, you have some underwriting announcements?
Yeah. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And here's our caller.
Okay. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Margaret Flowers.
Oh, hi, Margaret. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. What's new today?
Well, as you know, I'm the co-director with Kevin Zies of PopularResistance.org.
Yes.
And we're excited to talk about what the stage of the movement is in right now and where we can go to move it forward.
Okay, well, great. So you and Kevin are on the line right now together?
No, Kevin actually is not able to make it.
Oh, okay. Well, heck, that's okay, because I tell you what, we got a lot of great feedback when you called in to the World Labor Hour back, what was that, about 2 months ago and stuff, so honored to have you back on the air.
Yeah, I apologize for Kevin not being able to be here. He's actually was admitted to the hospital this morning.
Oh, no.
Hopefully. He'll be okay, but he just couldn't be on the radio show.
Okay. Well, you know, I wanted to call in because, you know, since I talked to you, once you called into the interview a couple months ago, you turned me on to this Popular Resistance email listserv and stuff, and I've been receiving it on a regular basis, and I'm telling you, some really fantastic stuff, so I wanted to kind of talk about that and maybe whatever else is kind of on your mind, if you'd like, whatever the listeners you think would be important for them to hear today.
Sure, thank you. We'd love to talk about Popular Resistance, and then also the Trans-Pacific Partnership is really at a crucial phase
yes.
right now.
So yes.
We hope people will get involved with that.
Okay. Okay, so whatever you'd like to start with. Well, let's start with Popular Resistance. How long ago was this formed? And just tell us a little about you know, some of the motivations for forming it and what you hope to do with it.
Sure, thank you. Some of your listeners may know that Kevin Zies and I were involved with organizing the occupation of Freedom Plaza back in 2011, and that came out of a process of working with activists around the country and trying to figure out what we could do to really start to change the system, because each of us that advocates on different issues like healthcare, education, jobs, we all face the same obstacles. The government is not able to respond to the needs of the people or reflect the desires of the people because of the influence of money. And so out of the occupation that we did in Washington, D.C., we continued to meet with people and strategize, and Popular Resistance was born from that. It was launched in June of 2013. And it really came about as it's a daily movement news and resource website, and the purpose is severalfold. It shows people that all of the different issues that we're struggling with and fighting on, the environment and others, are all connected to the broader struggle for social and economic justice. So we're really a bunch of sub movements that are part of a bigger movement, and we're connected that way. It was also a way to bring attention to the groups that are on the front line that are really challenging the power structure, and these are the groups that usually don't get a lot of attention or resources. These are the real grassroots groups that are you know, putting their bodies on the line, really, like the tar sands people, the anti-mountaintop removal type of people, the education people that are out there in the streets, the low-wage workers, and so on. Wanted to give them attention so people could see that these are the groups that need support and need you to join them if you can. We also have tools on the website, so whatever phase somebody is in, there's something that they can do or some way that they can participate in the movement. And so if you're just figuring out that, boy, things are really not going well in this country, why is that? You can go to the Educate section and find articles that talk about that in ways that you won't hear in the corporate media. If you are interested in organizing or strategizing, there are tools for that. If you want to be engaged in resistance, you can learn more about the groups that are doing that. And then another crucial piece of this is also building up alternative systems to replace the systems that we have right now that aren't working. And so there's a section of the website called Create that has information about those types of things. So it's really what we're trying to do is build a mass social justice movement in this country so that we really can work together strategically and shift the power so that things start to function in the interest of the public.
You know, I was really amazed when I was communicating with Kevin on email earlier in the week was that Popular Resistance is up to like about 1,000 hits a week of new people checking it out. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Actually, right, this month we've been averaging about 20,000 hits a day. It's been really amazing.
Excuse me, what was that? I'm sorry, back up for a second. What was that figure again? What did you say? Did I understand you correctly?
Beginning of January, we've been averaging 20,000 visits to the website a day. So we really do feel like we're filling a niche. We've seen the email list is growing quickly. People are signing on for our daily digest, which if you sign up for that, each morning you'll get an email that has a summary and a photo from each of the articles that we posted the day before. We post about 15 to 20 articles a day. And it's a nice way to kind of, I mean, we post the articles and I enjoy getting it in the morning and looking at it and being able to kind of see all at once what are the different things that are going on.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, the thing is that it's amazing because we're starting to see stuff. I mean, of course, one thing we advocate here is don't depend on the corporate media for your information, you know.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, because if you listen to them, everything's just honky-dory, you know. But it seems
like they specialize in distraction to keep people yes. from really paying attention to the crucial issues.
Indeed. But I tell you, it's amazing. I'm seeing stuff all over the country. I'm sure you're aware that Shama Sawant, the socialist candidate for city council, had a swearing-in ceremony this week. It was on Democracy Now. There was the 15 union members who ran in Lorain County, Ohio, because they were tired of being sold out by the Democratic Party, and 12 of them got elected. That's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, what's going on out there? And we were just talking here earlier that you're starting to see news stories even creeping into the corporate media newspapers about income inequality, the health, you know, the horrible health care system, and actually mentioning single-payer Medicare for All and other things like this. So obviously, it's gotten to the point where even some of the corporate media can't ignore a lot of the stuff that's going on.
Right, and Kevin and I wrote a series of articles, one that was published just at the end of 2013, and the other one was published a week later at the beginning of this year. And in the first one, we looked at kind of where the social justice movement is in the United States in terms of something called the Movement Action Plan that was developed by a man called Bill Moyer, who is not the Bill Moyers on public TV, but this Bill Moyer died in 2002, but he wrote about the 8 stages of a successful movement. And we looked at that and saw that stage 4 is the takeoff, and that was the Occupy phase when suddenly there are protests, mirrored protests all around the country, bringing attention to an issue that was bubbling beneath the surface but wasn't into the public or political dialogue. So that's where we saw wealth inequality and Wall Street corruption of government and those types of things suddenly in the spotlight. Stage 5 is when people feel like phase 4 didn't do anything. They can get kind of dejected and feel like, well, we did all this work and nothing really changed, but that's normal, and what they changed was that political discourse. And then the stage we're in right now, stage 6, which is the stage prior to success, success is 7, and then 8 is holding on to that success and starting new campaigns, because you always have to continue to work for social justice. But in stage 6, what the task is really to build this national consensus. We're going to see more and more talk about this, but we're still going to see in this phase that our politicians are not capable of responding adequately. So we're going to see some changes, we're going to see some small wins, but they're not quite at a stage where they could really address the root causes of the crises that we're in.
Okay, so this brings us to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, from what I've been seeing on this for the last year, I mean, this sounds like one horrible economic tsunami heading our way. So I guess I'll just let you start talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of agreement that if it passes, it's going to set back all the work that we've done on all the fronts, healthcare, education, jobs, the environment. It's really going to set that back because it's a trade agreement that's been negotiated in secret for about 4 years now by the United States. There are 12 countries in total. They're all Pacific Rim countries that are involved. It's really been pushed and initiated by the U.S., and we've really been pushing the agenda. It's the first time that a trade agreement has actually been negotiated in secret. They've classified the texts, so the public doesn't have access to it. Our members of Congress don't have access to it. But 600 corporate advisors have readily available access to it so they can change the language. We've seen some pieces of the text that have been leaked by WikiLeaks, and it's just very frightening. They're trying to patent everything that can possibly be patented, including animals and plants, so that they can monetize them and control them. They're building an international court system, a trade tribunal where corporations can sue countries if their laws interfere with expected profits, which is
expected profits.
Wow. Yeah, so NAFTA's been bad enough, because under NAFTA there have been a lot of cases where, like, for instance, there's one going in Canada where a Canadian country incorporated in Delaware, so it could be considered a foreign company, and then is suing its own government, Canada, because it wants to frack in an area around the St. Lawrence River, and the community banned fracking there. Mm-hmm. And so they're suing. Now, they're suing for $250 million, but under this Trans-Pacific Partnership goes through, they can sue for way more than that. They can sue for the billions that they expected to make from all the oil that they were going to take there. So what it does is it sets back our environmental, our worker protection, our public protection laws. It's going to set those way back. It's going to actually, this is a crazy part, it's being negotiated in secret, but it's going to change our laws even down to the local level, because we'll have to make those laws comply with what they're putting into this agreement. What they're doing this month is they just introduced something called Fast Track, and they gave it the ridiculous name of the job-creating bill. It's the complete opposite. We know it's going to lose jobs, and it's going to lower our wages, and we have to stop that, because if that goes through, then the president can sign this agreement into law, and Congress only gets to do an up or down vote on it, and we aren't going to get a chance to really see what's in it or how it's going to affect us. So I really urge people to go to stopfasttrack.org, and you can make phone calls to Congress members. You can write emails to them very easily there.
You know, this sounds like not just an economic disaster, but it sounds like a real threat to democracy. Basically, a local community has a voter referendum and says we do not want fracking or whatever, and then that can get overridden by some international corporate tribunal. I mean, this is pretty frightening. I mean, to me, this sounds like a global corporate feudalism.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And the crazy thing about this court system that operates outside of our own court system is that the primary judges on it are corporate lawyers on leave from their jobs, making the decisions. The corporation gets to present its case. Our own government does not get to present its case, and we can't appeal it. So it really, it's this huge corporate power grab that we have to stop. It's critical that we stop this.
You know, in conjunction with other things that's been happening, like the governor of Michigan basically expelling the elected city council and mayor of Detroit and putting in a local dictator, a city manager,
right.
And you know, the other frightening things. I mean, you know, this is some pretty scary stuff. Now, this sounds, you know, it doesn't sound so much like a trade treaty as a power grab.
Exactly. It has very little to do with trade. There are 29 chapters, and only 4 or 5 of them are actually about trade. All the others are the kinds of things that corporations have wanted to get through Congress through the front door, and they couldn't. So it includes, if people are familiar with the SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act, it includes those provisions in it. It deregulates our finance even further. It's really everything the corporations have wanted to have. Now, we've been able to stop these types of agreements in the past. We've been able to really slow this one down. They wanted Fast Track 2 years ago, and they haven't been able to get it. They wanted to get a Democrat co-sponsor on it in the House, and because of public pressure, they have not been able to get that yet. So we do have the ability to stop this, but we have to do it by exposing it, by letting people know about it, and by letting our Congress members know that they should not vote for this. And there's an Intercontinental Day of Action coming up on January 31st. We hope people will get involved in that. And it's you can go to flushthetpp.org and find out more about that.
Okay, that's going to be at several places around the country, or?
We did it. There was an International Day of Action on December 3rd. We had 35 actions around the country. This is this time it's involving Mexico, the U.S., and Canada, and so people are starting to organize things in their areas, and we have organizers that can help people out if they're interested in doing something where they live. It's not hard to do.
Okay. So this, this whole so-called trade agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you mentioned it's going to adversely affect, democracy. It's going to affect environmental laws and regulations. It's going to affect food safety.
Right.
And now I've heard also that if it does pass, that it will be able to stop any current or future healthcare single-payer healthcare systems potentially.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for one thing, we do know is that they're including these patent provisions that are going to keep the pharmaceutical companies, allow them to keep renewing their patents so they can keep the medication prices high, and that's going to really hurt our healthcare here and around the world, gives them new legal rights that they don't have to get higher prices, and then it has an anti-monopoly, we think. That's what was in the WTO, and this is really modeled after the World Trade Organization. It's like an anti-monopoly type of agreement. We do know it has language against anything that's called a state-owned enterprise that has like public advantages, like a public health plan. So, it's very likely that if this goes through, we would not be able to put a single-payer system into place in the United States, which is one of the main reasons I've been fighting it.
Yes. Now, also, I understand from NAFTA, and I didn't discover this until just recently, is that there's actually in the NAFTA agreement, it legally discriminates against worker-owned cooperatives as far as actually, some worker cooperative in the United States wanting to, say, export something to Mexico or vice versa or whatever.
Wow,
are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but I will definitely have to look at that because... we just have such a growing number of cooperatives in this country, and that's something that we hope will continue here. It's something that needs to happen so that workers can have more say.
Yes, and it sounds like these people, I mean, they don't just have a one-year or a five-year plan. I mean, they're basically planning for, you know, decades to come, and it sounds like they're trying to basically cut off all the our avenues for trying to improve people's lives and get greater democracy. I mean, it sounds like almost an in-game move here as far as total corporate world domination. I mean, I know that sounds dramatic.
No, that's not an exaggeration. There is an Atlantic version that's being negotiated right now. We call it TAFTA. What they did with these agreements that are different from other agreements as well, from other things we mentioned, is that they have a docking agreement so that after the negotiated, other countries can join on. So these are basically going to become the template for trade around the world. And it's something that will absolutely hasten the race to the bottom in environmental protection, in worker rights and wages. You know, we're seeing in Cambodia right now the garment workers that are striking and being really repressed, and martial law is being enforced, and they're being paid so low that they can't even, they have to go into debt just to survive. So this is the kind of thing that's going to be coming home if we don't stop this type of agreement.
And that's the bottom line here, is because when push comes to shove, they're going to have if this passes, they're going to have the legal authority to sic the police and the military on people from a community that are turning out and that can't get legal redress and demanding that their safety, their livelihoods are protected, and then we're going to be, you know, potential. I mean, this is a scary, very scary potential if this thing gets passed.
It is scary, and one of the things that's starting to happen in communities is that they're passing resolutions, basically considering themselves what we call TPP free zones. So these resolutions are saying, if the government passes a law in secret that affects our laws in our community and causes harm to our community, we're not going to obey those laws.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if the local police will go with the community or go with the state police or National Guard. Yes, they are, but anyway, I mean, this is what's frightening, you know, because, if this does get passed, I mean, oh my gosh, I mean, this is, it's difficult to even, think about the horrible things that would come about of this, but okay, Dr. Flowers, thank you so much for calling in today, and could you once again tell people where they can go to, what they can do to not just find out more information, but to get involved?
Sure. So please do go to popularresistance.org. There are links there to the other websites, but we have a campaign for the TPP called flushthetpp.org, and the action page is stopfasttrack.org.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again for calling in, and I hope Kevin recovers soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Goodbye. Bye.
there is a war going on for your mind. Media mavens mount surgical strikes from trapper keeper collages and online magazine racks. Cover girl cutouts throw up pop-up ads infecting victims with silicone shrapnel. Worldwide passenger pistols deployed paratroopers. Now it's raining pornography. Lovers take shelter. Post-production debutantes pursue you in NASCAR chariots. They construct ransom letters from biblical passages and bleed mascara into the holy water supplies. There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders slang test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. Their embroidered neckties say, stop snitching. Conscious rappers and whistleblowers get stitches made of acupuncture needles and marionette strings. There is a war going on for your mind. Professional wrestlers and vice presidents want you to believe them. The desert sky is their blue screen. They superimpose explosions. They shout at you. Pay no attention to the men behind the barbed curtain, nor the craters beneath the draped flags. Those hoods are there for your protection, and the medias these days are the size of corpses. There is a war going on for your mind.
We are the insurgents.
Born in the flood, bloody finger paint sets, black marketed freshwater cannons, forget me not, epitaph airbrushed with death, white tees, white beaters, button up, reattach flesh.
In between the lines,
outside of the law,
outside of the law,
underneath the veil,
our foundation,
we navigate the void,
find a pattern to break the mold,
to break the mold.
Family to know where we won't go.
There's blood stains on his shirt. They say that he's gone berserk. Sometimes when I wanna shut out this world, wanna rip up this page, wanna pour out this heart, wanna get up on this stage, and my lips become percussion, and my fists become the rage, and I pound on this table till it gives me something to say. Then I think about things that I've seen right in front of me that I don't wanna believe. Give me one of these mics, let me let them know the way that it is not how it's gonna be. Not that we don't let them get ahead of us, the present tension's no threat, it's just a fence across the path that we're already ready to walk rocks.
Okay, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported WFT Radio. You just heard Dr. Margaret Flowers calling in for Kevin Zeese, our scheduled guest. Unfortunately, Kevin had to go to the hospital this morning, so we're honored and grateful that Dr. Flowers called in talking about this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which sounds like pretty scary stuff. And so anyway, we have another underwriting announcement, I guess, that and a public service announcement here. Bob?
Yeah, this hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, give them a call at 217-328-2295. And I wanted to let you know about a fundraiser going on here, part of a public service announcement. Going on this evening, January 11th, 8 p.m. till 12:30 or so, midnight past that. It's happening at Memphis on Main, 55 East Main Street in Champaign. It's a Prairie Crossroads Blues Society fundraiser. They're going to have blues by Backpack Jones and Benny Jenkins Bloodline, and proceeds go to help send Backpack Jones, the winner of the local blues competition, to Memphis for the International Blues Challenge. Backpack Jones will be competing in the Blues Foundation's International Blues Challenge, January 22nd to the 25th, Memphis, Tennessee. The 2014 IBC Challenge will be the 30th year blues musicians from around the world compete for cash prizes and industry recognition. So for more information, check them out at prairiecrossroadsblues.org. That fundraiser is going on tonight, starting at 8 o'clock up at Memphis on Main.
Backpack Jones, that's a cool name. Can you describe the band a little bit?
That's a 10-piece band from Springfield, Illinois.
Okay.
Horn-driven band. They got a couple saxophones, trumpet players and stuff.
Okay.
You know, they do pretty much all original music, some swing and soul-driven stuff. Really good. Got a great great vocalist, and you know, good stuff. They opened up recently for B.B. King when he played in Springfield, Illinois.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They actually went to that competition last year in Memphis and made it to the semifinals. So they're going back this year. Hopefully they can do even better.
Okay. So, have you been down there for that before?
Yeah, the International Blues Challenge. It's quite an event down there in Memphis. They typically have 120 bands from around the world come down and compete, and usually about 70 or 80 solo and duo acts come down there. They pretty much have every club on Beale Street has got something going on.
Oh, wow.
You can just go from club to club, and it's amazing. A lot of musicians, industry people there from the music industry, just out there networking, finding out who's the next best up-and-coming band, you know. It's only open to bands that are kind of on their way up. The established bands have other awards and stuff like that, the Blues Music Awards and things that they're eligible for. So this is open to up-and-coming bands, but people come from around the world for this.
Okay.
They typically have probably 30 bands coming from overseas and stuff, and some great, great music down there.
Okay, and what date is that again today?
That's happening January 21st through the 25th in Memphis, Tennessee. The actual competition is Wednesday the 22nd through Saturday the 25th.
So okay, so that's coming up here in about 2 weeks then, roughly. Okay.
Two rounds of quarterfinals on Wednesday and Thursday nights, so all the bands get to play through that if they advance. About half the bands advance to the semifinals on Friday night, and then about eight or nine bands advance into the finals.
Okay.
So interesting stuff. It's an amazing event down there. Great food, great music, and a chance to meet a lot of blues fans.
Okay, well, great. Okay, yeah, if you can get down there, I'm sure it's definitely worth going. I'd like to make it down there myself sometime. It sounds like a good time. I know when, oh, gosh, this was back in 2000. When was Hurricane Katrina? Oh, yeah, I remember now. 2005, yes. Yeah. My wife's friends from Germany came in 2004. We kind of did a little tour and met them in New York City and ended up here in Champaign. And the last stop before Champaign was Memphis from New Orleans. And they really liked Memphis a lot. You know, it was small enough to where it was, you know, quite easy to get around and, you know, all that, and just unbelievable, you know, good little, you know, eating spots and all these music clubs and everything on Beale Street. So, yeah, and a lot of other interesting stuff, too. So, but anyway, I just want to tell everybody that you've been listening to the World Labor Hour broadcast on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM in Central Illinois and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. I guess we're going to leave you a little with more music. You've been here listening to the Flowbots here, and then we're going to go into the Union Edge. So until you know, next week, be safe and power to the people. Take care.
Somewhere between prayer and revolution, between Jesus and Huey P. Newton, that's where you find Johnny Five shooting water guns at the audience while you're scooting. Your gluteus max due to the fact that he's tooting on the horn. Gonna warn you that I'm rooting for the other team in the culture war. So I stab the beast belly as the vulture snores. Yo, Joe, let it blow with convulsive force till walls fall off their false supports, till Jericho's aircraft carriers alter course, and all brave young Americans are called ashore. 'Cause we've already lost the war they keep waging, splatter in the streets and battles that keep raging, bloody in each page and the story that we're studying. Each day the same, just the names keep changing.
Saying the same things over again, repeating the same slogans, we don't know where we've been.
We've been all over the globe on our government funds, leaving man, woman, and child dead, bloody and numb.
Saying the same things over again, repeating the same slogans, we don't know where we've been.
We've been overthrowing leaders with legitimate views, democratically elected, but we didn't approve.
How many times can the line divide? How many wars to uphold your pride? These fears uncontrolled just swirl the tide of blood in the streets while the people die. I'ma keep on trying, long as suffering is multiplying. And why not? These souls getting tossed and left out. I rob my back's broad enough to help lift your cross. As long as you help with mine, the process of healing will take some time. To see the pain in your face is the same as mine. It's not a game or a race, but the stakes is high. We maintain our mistakes for the sake of sides. As long as it takes, I'll say it one more time. As long as it takes, I'll say it one more time. As long as it takes, I'll say it one more time.
Saying the
same things over again. Repeating the same slogans, we don't know where we've been.
Hello and welcome. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's